Monday, December 31st, New Year's Eve in LA. It's LA Podcast. We have Scott Frazier, present. Hayes Davenport, present. Alyssa Walker, present from, where are you?
Colorado.
Gone but not forgotten.
Yeah. Where the low tonight will be 1 degree.
Wow. It's also very cold here. I had to join a gym today for the first time ever because it's just too cold.
It was so cold.
Exercise outside. Yeah, I just need a place to go to get warm. Not a lot of news this week. Everything is kind of, this time of year, everything is on hold everywhere. But we thought we would do sort of a year in review. We would look ahead to next year, just kind of wrap things up and look forward. I have a little LA story to start off. Today, I went to the University of Philosophical Research. Alyssa, have you ever been to this place?
No.
Okay. Do you know what it is?
No, I don't mean, it sounds familiar.
You've definitely seen it. It's that building on, as you're like headed toward the 5 in like Los Feliz, that's on the corner of Griffith Park Boulevard and Los Feliz Boulevard. There is a statue of a Sphinx out front.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Now I know you're talking about. Yeah.
It's this old kind of interestingly designed building that I was always kind of curious about. This sign, there's a sign outside that says University of Philosophical Research. It says open to the public at these hours. It says they offer master's degrees in, I want to say, consciousness, something like that. And I pointed out to Geneva, I was like, that place is so interesting. And she found that it was open today for a little while, but then I wanted to go and she was kind of scared and she didn't want me to go by myself. But I went and I was a little scared, but it was totally great. They have this like giant, so the university was founded by a guy named Manly Hall.
Uh-huh.
Manly P. Hall, who was into, he wrote like a compendium of mysticism, and he was into all this like Eastern religion stuff.
Right.
But he founded this university, there's this giant library, like a philosophy library inside that's like totally intact. You can just like sit there and read the books. Great place to do work. I was the only person there the entire day.
It's like a co-working space for heightened consciousness.
Yes. Yeah.
You have a glow. You seem like you've tapped into some kind of.
And then you went and joined a gym.
It worked. Something worked. I was met by the president of the university, who was very nice, a guy named Greg. They have all these lecture series that are interesting. I was recruited in some way because I had a great time.
It's kind of like that. What was that in? There was like GQ or Esquire or something that somebody did some month-long trip through all of the different cults in LA and like came out just like a ruined person.
Just joined them one by one?
Yeah, basically.
Oh, wow. No, this didn't feel like a cult, which I'm sure is the mark of all great cults. But I feel like it rarely works out when you just wander into one of those places that you're like curious about.
Yeah.
And this time it definitely did. Alyssa, you haven't been here. I assume you don't have.
Well, I left there, which I felt like was a good story in itself. There, here.
This is your essay. You're leaving LA essay.
I left.
Goodbye to all that.
So, of course, everybody, you know, has to get out of the city. You guys are experiencing like the wonderful, horrible time, you know, where everybody's out of town. You can drive anywhere in 25 minutes for real. So I got to experience the airport on one of the busiest travel days, and you can't actually park when it's such a busy travel day because everyone has already parked in all the spaces and like half of like
what are we talking about? Lot C, yeah.
Yeah, Lot C has been under construction for like a year or something.
How is that? Like, it's just open space.
Yeah, I don't know what they're trying to fix or build there. Not housing or anything like that. But yeah, you can look and see if like the lots are full, and it says all the lots are full, but I guess you can sometimes get around like the barriers and drive in and find a spot anyway. But we've had horrible time and too stressful, you know, trying to park. So we've been taking the flyaway with my family of four, with my two young children, which means walking out of our house with our suitcases, you know, getting on the bus and going to Union Station.
Yeah.
And it was great. Like the best experience ever. Stress-free. flying over, you know, the foggy LA basin, you know, to get to our flight, except for when you get to the Horseshoe at LAX, and it can take up to 45 minutes to get around the Horseshoe, depending on the travel day. And
for departures, especially, it's way, way worse.
Yeah. And you don't get any kind of preference for being on the flyaway bus.
That is crazy. That makes no sense. Even like parking buses, parking shuttles should get their, get some kind of preference in that Horseshoe. But where would they go, I guess?
And I guess they're doing this, you know, as part of the big construction project with the People Mover and all these other things happening at the airport. In a while, they're going to be kicking out Uber and Lyft pretty soon from the Horseshoe.
Hmm.
Before they start the bigger process of
deciding. Do you know when that's going to be?
I don't know exactly. We should maybe have our taxi commissioner on to talk a little bit about that.
That was a short-lived experiment. It feels like they just got into the Horseshoe.
Well, I think they're going to have to figure out a new way to do it, because there's going to be construction and there's just not going to be the space. Because you can see they're starting to get ready for, you know, they keep changing the rules, like you said, like no matter what. They're like, oh, and then this week you have to go upstairs to get your lift. And it's actually very hard to get a lift from the airport. It takes a really long time. So you should just get on the flyaway. You should just wait for the flyaway and it will probably come sooner. But anyway, it was just like a really great experience to take the flyaway, not worry about parking, even going through the Horseshoe with my daughter, who's obsessed with planes and buses, and got to like learn about the short-lived life of the Encounter restaurant and the theme building. So it was actually a great history lesson for my family and a fun way to get out of the city.
Oh, cool. Are you going to take it back? I guess so. You have to. You're stranded.
Yeah, why not? Our car is not there. So
yeah. Scott, hit me.
So this week, Hayes has actually already been subjected to a number of stories about my trials and travails of refurnishing parts of my apartment.
I'm interested to hear how it connects to the city of Los Angeles.
Well, basically it's trying to actually get like things that I've purchased to my house is difficult.
Sure.
It's very hard. Alyssa said that everybody's out of town and there's no traffic. That it's not true on Hollywood Boulevard. It is distinctly false. We had to pick up a U-Haul and go get a table. We've never had like a dining table. So we were like getting a small like coffee table that also serves for meals, and like getting from Silver Lake to Hollywood, I think took us about 35 minutes.
I wonder why it's so bad over there. I guess the tourists are the only people.
Yeah, no. So that was kind of the conversation that we were having, was whether or not the tourist trap was, you know, still working its magic. It is. People love it.
Oh, and, yeah, absolutely.
And it's kind of remarkable the difference between every other intersection in the city and Hollywood and Highland in terms of the number of pedestrians there. There's nothing quite like it here in LA. I will say there are a lot of trips that I made in the past couple of days that I reasonably could have made by transit. However, doing so like on the repeat basis that I had to, like going out to buy things, going back out to pick them up, going to get like multiple times to go to Home Depot because I'm incompetent and can't get the correct part as I need it, would have proven very difficult. And that is, I think, an issue that is reflective of the way that things are laid out in our city still. So
it does feel like when there is so much less, there is less traffic now this season overall, this time of year, that they should just like run the buses like crazy, just kind of for fun. Just like because they would just operate so efficiently and just to get people used to taking them
on Christmas and New Year's, which is a great opportunity to study like Election Day, how people use transit when it's free, or say all door boarding, or all these other, you
wait,
know,
is it features. Actually free on those days, or that's a suggestion?
Yeah. Oh, no, it is. It really is.
Pairing it though, we're pairing free transit with Sunday schedules. So if you work on Christmas and New Year's, which a lot of people do, you don't have to pay for your ride, but you are probably getting the short end of the stick as far as services is concerned, and also people, I think, that we're probably not seeing the benefit that we would see if we were running normal schedule. I get that they, as a transit agency, also want to let drivers be home with their families and things like that. But yeah, definitely, while the traffic is lessened, seeing more buses on the roads and things like that, I think it goes to something that Metro has actually started talking about recently, which is that most of their service is oriented around people commuting to and from work.
Yep.
As opposed to people like me who are just like trying to do errands, complete like menial tasks in their lives. That kind of stuff is a lot harder to do if you have to make lots of unconnected trips and buses are not frequent or trains are not easily accessible. So
I took a bus on Christmas Eve and brought a large pizza on it for the first time, and it wasn't fine. I was a little worried that people would not be cool about it, but everyone was very respectful. No one even commented on my pizza.
We actually took one of the free buses home from downtown Christmas Eve night and were one of like two people on the bus for the entire way back from downtown, which was great.
We were talking last night. That sort of reminds me, Ellis, I saw Scott last night socially, and his partner.
Guys.
And Sarah, Scott's partner, came up with an idea, which basically saying that the Metro, I know, Alyssa, that you love the new Metro ad, that like we're all in this together, everybody ride the bus.
Right.
And I like it too. It is really good. But Sarah was like, it doesn't really speak to like bringing on new riders as much as a campaign that was like, I thought it should just be like, use your phone on your way to work. The whole, like, you love your phone, just like
never get off your phone.
Watch that Netflix series.
Yes, ride the bus
to get to,
and just look at your beloved phone the entire time. And she said she had a better version, which was like, get shit done, like at least sell the idea that you can do things, answer emails, on your way or something like that.
Like, it's going to take you longer, but you can do other things.
Yeah.
Be productive if you want.
But that's free. That's free for Metro CEO Phil Washington. So let's wrap up. We've done a little wrap up from the past year, stuff that we were happy that have, stuff that we were thankful for around Thanksgiving. I thought we could start by each of us going around and talking about what we each think was the biggest story, most consequential or like representative or like biggest in some way story that happened in the city this past year. Who would like to go first? I'm looking at you, Alyssa. I don't know if it froze on I can see you on FaceTime.
I'm frozen. It's 1 degree, so that it could definitely be that. Internet's so unreliable.
Go for it.
I mean, the biggest story continues to be, I would say several years in a row, is the tremendous amount of unsheltered Angelenos that we are living next door to in all of our neighborhoods across the city. And that finally the city sort of incrementally moved towards a plan. And there has been a lot of pushback still and anger and NIMBYism.
I agree. Well, I'm going to make you pick a sub story within that genre of story. Like, what's a big one that you think was like kind of representative? And this is mine too, so I'm risking you stealing my story.
Oh, if you have the sub story. I mean, I think what happened in Koreatown with that situation was a good sub story, or a good kind of an emblematic part of this whole saga, because it brought many of these deeper issues to the forefront. But at the same time, I mean, it shows how far we have to go when it comes to the elected leaders working with the communities that they are supposed to represent and making sure that they feel that their needs, that these people's needs are heard. And then also just the part of it where we have to kind of look at our neighborhoods as more than just small places. They have to be part of this bigger system. And just saying that, like, we can't have this next to this, the school issue, the all these different, you know, issues that were brought up about, like, oh, we can't have it too close to the kids, we can't have it too close to this, we can't have it too close to the metro station. I don't know what all the different concerns were, right? But you can't just think of a place as being just like one, the what the three blocks around it represent. It's people who are homeless, are people who are cooking your food and teaching your children in some cases and driving your Lyft cars around. And so thinking that you could just push things like a couple blocks away from you, or you don't want it to be this close to, or you don't like this tent to be there, but you also don't want a building that's more than four stories tall across the street from you. That we just have to stop thinking that way. And I don't know how we're going to get past that. So that it's kind of a bummer. And to me that is like the story of the year.
Yeah, that is also my story of the year, I think, because like sort of like you're saying that it's a red flag for the kind of stuff we can expect over the next few years. As we talk a lot about how the city is changing with lots of new transit projects, with new approaches to housing, with the Olympics coming, all of these things. And I think what we're going to start to run into is the fact that L.A., is arranged, everyone knows, as a lot of different neighborhoods, many of which are defined by the ethnic groups that live there. And a lot of those ethnic groups have been marginalized in some way. And Koreatown is a great example, not even starting with the riots way before that, but in a way that was kind of defined by the riots and feeling like they were abandoned by the city and had to rebuild on their own. I think every neighborhood has its own way of like getting defense. I mean, like obviously white neighborhoods are the champions of this, of trying to keep out change and development. But what do you do when your neighborhood actually has a decent case for not having to shoulder the load of change that is supposed to benefit the entire city? When you have
had the density. I mean, you think of a place like Koreatown and you're like, oh, well, why would anybody care about another project, you know, being built in a place that has many tall buildings and great transit access and, you know, not a lot of the problems that are happening in other parts of the city. So, and I live very close to where this shelter, but both locations, you know, this is basically my neighborhood, even though I don't live in Koreatown. And there's a lot of great things happening as far as supportive housing and other projects that are hopefully going to allow more people to live and afford in this very, you know, amenity rich neighborhood in a way. So it was very hard to go through that process and see, even like you said, even in a place that was not the traditional people who are fighting against new things happening in their neighborhoods.
I think that there are two different readings that you can have of the Koreatown anti-shelter, the series of protests largely aimed at Herb Wesson in particular, but also there was a lot of more, like you were saying, Hayes, a lot more generalized rhetoric about the city has basically just not cared about what Korean Americans want for a long time.
Absolutely.
So there are two readings. I think one is that this is an emergent, like, strand of the same type of NIMBYism that we've seen characteristically in white neighborhoods for a long time. And it is a model that they followed successfully in terms of getting the supportive housing, or the bridge housing rather, sited outside of their neighborhood. The other one is that this is actually in some way, shape or form, like the representation of a populist anger at Los Angeles as a city and the growth of a new political, basically power block within Koreatown that is looking for more homegrown representation. That is broadly how they self-represented in terms of saying, like, we don't oppose homeless shelters. I think that there's a considerable amount of, rightfully, I think there's a considerable amount of doubt along those lines about just how free of like homelessness phobia there was in the community. But that generally speaking, what they said was, we want the engagement of city, we want their ear, basically. We want city officials to listen to us when we talk.
Yeah.
And I think that that came out definitely in like a very bombastic fashion this year. It is interesting to like think about where we go from here. I think we've already speculated potentially someone from within that community might try to run to take the seat that Herb Wesson will be vacating mm-hmm. before too long. But I think one of the keys is that if there's one thing that we could like leave behind in 2018 as a city, hopefully it could be this notion that homeless individuals, people who are like sleeping on the streets, are not like legitimate parts of the communities in which they live. That they are transient, that they are coming from somewhere else, bringing their problems into the community with them, rather than being representative of problems that exist in that community, being a part of it and being individuals that the community has an obligation, morally speaking, and socially speaking, to help.
But this new flavor of NIMBYism is, I think, as big a challenge to that transition that you're talking about taking place as there ever has been, because there's a kind of NIMBYism that you can't listen to. The people that are just trying to defend a stake that they like own their ownership of the neighborhood that they don't actually have. It's these people are impossible to persuade. There's no amount of bargaining you can do to like get them on your side. At some point you just have to, there's like a certain type of suburbanite that you just have to ignore and put something up against their wishes. This other kind that is coming from these neighborhoods that have not gotten the kind of representation or the attention that they want from this, they've been actively marginalized for a really long time, is a kind of NIMBYism that you have to listen to.
Right.
And these projects are already so hard to put up. I don't know if it's possible, given how many neighborhoods, it's not just Koreatown. There are hundreds of other neighborhoods around the city that could make the same case that Koreatown does, where they basically say like, why us? Like this neighborhood has been like dumped on by the city like for forever. Now we are responsible for fixing this problem that you caused. Like, put, you know,
right.
I'd be interested to see what, like, there were some permanent supportive housing units going up in Boyle Heights, but they didn't try to put like bridge housing there. I'd be curious to see what would have happened in that neighborhood that already has an apparatus to fight gentrification. Would they also say, hey, you can't force us to take people who are homeless, who are probably not even part of this neighborhood, and just like have us shoulder the load, because we've been having to do that in so many ways in the city forever. So I don't know what the solution is, but that is why I think it is a big story. Scott, do you go ahead.
I want to borrow the Tommy Newman look on the bright side page from our guest from Everyone In, the big homelessness campaign that United Way is doing. The Hollywood shelter, CD13's bridge housing, went in, is ground broke with hardly any pushback from the community. There was a lot of engagement. There was tons of meetings. Mitchell Farrell did a really good job. They cited it in a place that I think almost everyone agreed showed it was in a place where the most need was obvious, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's happening. It's going to be great, you know, and it's really going to make a difference for these people's lives. So. Yeah,
and it's a perfect location. And it's one of those things where you're like, it would be great, obviously, if they just said like it's the upper income neighborhoods that are mostly residential that should take this housing because they can afford to like take the hit the best. But that's not the logical place to put these sites. So like right. you, they should be near transit. They should be accessible to all kinds of different.
And the Koreatown site, the first site was data driven from the homelessness count. They said like, and you can see it when you go there. It's very obvious.
Oh, it's perfect. You can see there's a red line and purple line station right there.
Right. But that's where the most people were already living on the street. Yeah. It makes sense to put them in these, you know, certain places. So.
But the new one also was
it's just as needed.
Yeah,
yes.
Just as Scott, do you have any other stories that you thought were big this year?
So my if I could hit on like Alyssa did, if I could hit on a theme first and then pick a sub story. I think for me the theme of 2018 in Los Angeles is. Like really the lack of political leadership that we've had from our city officials at a time when I think that we desperately need it. This is, as we've talked about from the start of the show, LA is a place where, you know, minority, we've been that way for decades. We've been a place that has been heavily defined by Latinx culture, Mexican culture, and Central American culture, people from a variety of cultures throughout the continent, being directly threatened and imperiled by our federal government at this point, and getting strong overtones of like worse things to come in the future from the Trump administration. I feel like this is really a time that we could have and should have expected our officials to not just like posture in defense of Angelenos, but to really step up and demonstrate what political leadership can look like. And I feel like we largely did not, as I'm like thinking back over the year, I feel like we largely did not get that. Two examples that come to mind, you know, not to pick on Eric Garcetti, but he is the mayor. You know, he's the public figure associated with the city, and that's what he wanted when he took the job. So two examples come to mind from Garcetti specifically. The first is. His refusal to actually state that LA or that he thinks that LA should be a sanctuary city that kind of characterized most of the first half of Trump's term in office. Right. That kind of sneaking around about what sanctuary city actually means when it has a pretty clear and well-established meaning.
And at a time when a lot of mayors were standing up and saying that we are a sanctuary city and like speaking out in defiance of federal policies.
Absolutely.
And so it's not like nobody was doing it.
And so exactly. This is a well-worn path, politically speaking. We have discussed numerous times here that a lot of Garcetti's actions make sense when particularly looked at from a frame of reference where he is looking beyond LA City, trying to figure out how his actions will play for a national presidential electorate.
And I think the Olympics were a big factor in a lot of his decision making, having to work with
you know, like anti-Olympic activists have frequently brought up as a hazard of bringing the Olympics here.
Yep.
The reliance on the Trump administration that is actively seeking to demonize a large portion of Angelenos. And that is sad and hurtful to see from our mayor at this point in time. The other thing that I would bring up is so SB 827 was a huge story this year, probably the most indicative of where California is as a state.
Yeah. Just to quickly summarize what that is, that we're shuffling through a lot of former guests as we talk about the different stories. You talked about Tommy Newman, Ann Orchard from No Olympics came on the show. And also State Senator Scott Wiener from the Bay Area came on the show. He was the person who put up a bill earlier this year, Senate Bill 827, that basically would have loosened restrictions for building heights, and it would have allowed apartments, multifamily housing, to be built around transit lines. And it was hugely controversial, and it was shit canned in committee.
Now, and irrespective of how you feel about SB 827, I was encouraged. My personal journey throughout the bill process was basically, I was encouraged by the state looking to take over local control. I think that there are very few problems in California that could not be addressed in some way by reducing the amount of local control. I was then, you know, a bit more critical about the bill based on impacts that it could have in terms of accelerating displacement. And then ultimately, I felt like the final version of it in committee when it was killed was pretty good. And I think that the new version
got a lot better.
The new version of it is
better
still.
Yep.
However, so to zoom back in on LA, I think that in particular, Garcetti's reaction was indicative. Of course, we would expect like Councilmember Paul Koretz, who famously said that it would turn the West Side into Dubai, a racialized and fairly absurd statement. Of course, that was sort of expected because he's Paul Koretz. That's just who he is and what he does. Mm-hmm. However, Garcetti's reaction, where he initially came out,
his reactions
initially, and actually not only did they change over time, they changed depending on what hat he was wearing. He was at the time the chair of the Metro board, and he in a Metro committee meeting made a joke about wanting to support SB 827 as chair of Metro board, and then oppose it as mayor of LA, which he ultimately did. Mm-hmm. But his first reaction to SB 827 was to say that it was a good idea, but he wanted to see it have more affordability. That was seized on by Scott Wiener's office, who was actually in the process of working on amendments that would do exactly that. And they said, you know, we're excited that Garcetti supports in principle what we're doing. And then once the amendments came out, Garcetti came out and said, like, the polar most opposite of what he had
very
said.
Very harshly rejected
that,
it.
That, I think basically the gist of his statement was nobody would want to see a neighborhood where you have single family homes and then also apartment buildings, which yeah. actually characterizes much of L.A., as it currently
including
exists.
The street that he lives on. He lives on a street with mansions, and like three blocks away are very tall towers on Wilshire.
So uh-huh. that was the most embarrassing like turnabout and betrayal to me of, and I think we've also talked about this. I think I openly speculated, if not here, then on Twitter that, somebody reminded him, somebody with a deep pockets and a large checkbook reminded him that he has a rather expensive election to fund coming up. His reaction was so embarrassing, that the turnabout was so embarrassing, and I think really just shows the utter lack of willingness to engage on a real level with the massive problems that we have in the city this year.
Yeah, I agree with you about the lack of visible leadership, which is surprising. I think kind of a missed opportunity for someone who was on the campaign trail basically all year. I did right. expect to see more LA boosterism than we saw. It was more about national politics and the country coming together and stuff. I didn't hear the case for LA that I sort of thought I would be hearing. But I'm interested to hear what you think about this, Alyssa, because I think now is actually a great time to kind of raise the flag of LA as like what the country could be. I think Garcetti could have said, could have just like when Trump got elected, he could have basically come out and said, we have the biggest undocumented immigrant population in the country. They're an essential part of what the city is, and we're going to defend them, and no federal, we're not going to work with any federal agency. Everyone, like these are our residents and they're part of the city and they're going to stay here.
Yep.
I think if he had really been out in front on homelessness, I think that we could have seen a bigger dent in the problem than we actually saw over the past year. That's really the one thing right now that is preventing LA from, I think, being one of the like biggest success stories in like as an American city right now.
Yeah.
We were talking last night, Alyssa, there was that article in the New York Times, I think yesterday, about how every city is afraid of turning into another city, like being San Francisco.
That was great. Emily Badger. Yeah. Yes. It was like, we all are warning about the Manhattanization.
Manhattanization.
Now we don't want to be San Francisco.
Yes. Yeah. Seattleization. Kansas City is worried about being Denverized. and I was thinking like, The article doesn't really talk about any city being scared of LAification. And I realized that the only people who talk about LAification in a bad way are like James Woods.
Yeah.
Or like San Diego. I was trying to think about that too. I feel like there could be bumper stickers in San Diego that say, don't let like.
Sure.
You know, Pacific Beach become LA, or yes, something.
Or like Greg, or like Greg Abbott, like everyone in Texas talks about like not wanting to turn it to California, whatever. Like, yeah. Who cares? But that's good. Like, we want those kind of people to be saying that. I think that's a positive sign for okay. for the direction that we're heading. And I would have loved to see the mayor this year, if he was going to be going to every other state in the country, to be making the case for having all those places become more like LA, the place that he just came from, and to talk about the progress that we're trying to make here. And, I don't know, Alyssa, do you think that this would have been a good year to make the case for LA?
I think the two platforms that I saw him trying to make the case for LA being a leader on were, I mean, I don't know where, I don't know what, when you go to say all these small rural, where did he go? We could make a whole list. Minnesota. I don't know. No, he didn't go to Minnesota. I'm kidding. Iowa.
I think
Iowa,
he did. I'm pretty sure he did go to Minnesota.
He
went to Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina,
so
Nevada,
Iowa, yeah,
for sure.
Florida.
He went to Mississippi.
Yeah. So what do you say, like, when you go there to say, like, oh, LA is really leading, and I think diversity is probably something that he could maybe talk about, but you're right, like, without saying, like, we're protecting what makes the city great, there's not much to say. So what I heard him say a lot was talking about all of our energy efficiency and how we're switching to solar and all these things, which is also just really not true, because we continue to have this major car problem that's getting worse, and not really focusing on that part of our climate mayor. You know, he was the president of the climate mayors too. Let's also unpack that. You know, over this last year, this coalition of over 400 U.S. mayors got all this press for standing up to Trump and going to all these climate summits and, you know, making all these pledges. And actually, the truth is, like, in 27 U.S. cities, emissions have peaked and they're going down. L.A. is one of them. But that doesn't address the fact that our transportation emissions keep going up. We haven't fixed our transit ridership problems. We haven't made our city work in that way that Scott was talking about, for regular people that are doing their daily business, getting around the city, not just going to work, you know, picking up their kids, doing, you know, errands. And that's a huge failure and not something you can really go brag about when you're going to these other places. So that's a huge disappointment and a really big failure, I would say, of leadership, to pretend that we're this climate leader and not be at all.
Right. That was a big story. I think you missed, Alyssa, when, depending on when you left, but the days around Christmas, so sad, because this was my first Christmas in LA. I've always gone out of town to see family. And I so wanted to just be out there and like have the city to myself, basically. But the air was unbreathable.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
Christmas Eve, it was the whatever 2.5 particles that I'm forced to check every morning when I would get up.
Well, your phone tells you now.
Yes,
it's so convenient.
Yes. were in the 170 range, the like the unhealthy for all groups range. It was so sad.
Yeah, it was brutal.
And that's like kind of another big story that I feel like not enough people are talking about. Speaking of another old guest we had on, or former guest or past guest, when we had Bryn Lindblad on from Climate Resolve, learning that our smog problem, something that LA was so has so famously beaten, that we always brag to other cities. We're like, we kicked that smog. It's totally back and it's worse than it's been in 3 decades. Right. And the fact that we have it on Christmas Eve is really, really, really bad.
Yeah. Yeah. When no cars are supposedly driving and when it's cold.
We're supposed to have basically have a Carmageddon and the weather is supposed to be nice and like, you know, sweeping the pollution away.
So let's look ahead. Let's look to 2019. Alyssa, you guys at Curbed already did a wish list for 2019 to Santa for things that you want to see happen in LA. I thought what we could do is goals that we could actually check in on next year when this podcast has broken up because the three of us are too famous from it. And the ego just like goes to our heads. But we can check in and so things that we actually hope will have happened by next year. And that we think are achievable. I'm happy to go first. Mine is a little bit abstract, but what I would like to see, going back to homelessness stuff, I don't think there really exists something that should exist in the city that doesn't is an actual grassroots organization of residents who go around to public meetings about bridge housing, permanent supportive housing, in their neighborhoods, even in other neighborhoods, go to city council meetings, and are as loud a voice in favor of getting new housing, like for people who are homeless, put into their neighborhoods as there are as loud as the voices against it. I don't think everyone in to Tommy's credit, they're doing a great job over there. I don't think it can really be that because it's United Way. It's like not an organization of citizens, of residents that is kind of what I'm picturing here. There are plenty of fake versions of this. AstroTurf organizations like Housing is a Human Right that were very vocal on Prop 10 and are now very vocal on SB 50 and stopping new housing production from happening. But when it comes to any new housing project that's going up that is threatened by protests or anything like that, they are non-existent. They will not show up for anything like that because they don't care about those things. I can't speak for everyone who works at the organization, but certainly the person at the top doesn't.
Right.
My wish for the end of next year is that at some point a big group of people gets together. I think it should be mostly like youth, like younger, like people
like that.
Between their
like the climate movement at the national level, like with the,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Like people in their like 20s, 30s, 40s, like get together. And show up to these events, give themselves a name, like whatever it is, and become like basically an advocacy group to get these housing units built, get people in shelter, get people off the street. I think there's no reason at this point why that doesn't exist already. Achievable.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's good. And someone will probably tell us that this already exists and it just needs more amplification.
Well, then they're not doing quite a good enough job.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what we're here for. That's what we're here for.
But please, please tell us. I would amplify anything like that.
I like the idea of young people. Yeah, I think that's
right. I wish that those were the people at the front of it. Like, for example, it exists for like the general YIMBY movement. There's a group called Abundant Housing that is mostly young people that tries to get projects built generally, and they definitely support any permanent supportive housing project and like bridge housing stuff like that goes up. They do show up for those things, but it's not specific to this cause, which I think has to be an important part of this imaginary group.
Right.
Who's next?
It can grow in fear of Alyssa taking my. So my thing that I would like to see happen in LA next year, I would like to see Metro have. So I would like to see Metro come out with a plan for developing congestion pricing model for Los Angeles County. And using the proceeds from that to fund, as they've said that they're interested in doing, free transit, but free transit with high quality service, frequencies, things that could make it more reliable and easier to use as an alternative to driving, ways that we can mitigate any impacts in terms of job access. But I would really like to see congestion pricing, a model for it that would include basically everything from the 5 west, essentially, north of the 10. You really want a large area, right, that you can discourage people from driving in. We don't have a strong enough center here, the way that New York is considering doing congestion pricing in Manhattan, or the city of county of San Francisco is planning on doing city limits. That is sort of easier. They have those kind of strong center geographic areas that they can bound off and charge people who come in and out. That won't really work in LA. We have to look at using corridors or specific freeways or things like that, figure out a way that we can handle a large percentage of the traffic that happens.
Build a wall, you're saying?
Yes.
That's a great one. We've talked about with congestion pricing, charging people to come into the city. To do that, it has to come with like other improvements to make a system like that workable. Mm-hmm. Lots of improvements to transit to make it easier for people to get in by bus or rail. Also building more in the city center so people can just live near where they work. What is there a change if they come up with a model like this? What would you like to see them do first on the way to congestion pricing? Do you think that they can just start charging first and then use that money for improvements, or do you think they have to do improvements first?
So one of the things that I think that LA could do and hasn't really looked into doing in any kind of wholesale way would be to look at, so in California we have, or in LA we have classifications for the specific road types that we have. We have different classes of like arterials and stuff like that. A lot of Metro's most popular lines are on major arterials like Wilshire, of course, Santa Monica, Venice, going east to west from downtown to the west side. My thought would be like eliminate street parking entirely on roads like that, those class of roads. There's like literally no reason to have on-street parking there ever, and turn those over to buses on, like, and transit vehicles.
Like on Sunset,
Scott,
for
that's
example.
Like 3 things that you're wishing for now.
They're all Alyssa's wishes. Alyssa's just crossing things off her list.
So my wish is to have a plan for an implementation plan for congestion pricing. And I want to just say that in a couple months, Metro is coming out with their next gen bus plan, and that is not going to be this plan. It really is not. It's going to be, in my opinion, much more modest tinkering with the shape and structure of bus routes, which is, I think, I don't want to say it's like, I don't want to use the word frivolous. I think it is completely unmatched to the scope of the problems that Metro has as an agency, the scope of the societal problems that we are dealing with as it pertains to climate change. I think that we have more or less a network that is, what really can you do? It's a grid. It's several grids. There's minimal changes that are necessary there. And I think that the more systemic changes that Phil Washington, to his great credit, brought up a couple weeks ago in terms of providing high quality transit to everyone that would be free, that is a much more aspirational goal. And we should start doing that as soon as we possibly can.
Alyssa, what's left from your from your wish list?
Yeah, I'm like checking them off.
What's your LA resolution for next year?
And we should mention too that one important piece of this puzzle is that cordon pricing specifically, which is kind of where the city center type congestion pricing, where you fence off an area, has to be changed at the state level.
Right.
And Richard Bloom, who is a West Side Assembly member, is introducing the legislation to make that happen, reintroducing it, because they introduced it last year with Scott Wiener, and now he's going to introduce it again, he said. So
I'm amazed by that. Our Santa Monica representative.
Yeah.
It's like have like an assisted suicide. Like, is that what this plan is?
Yeah. And he said they want to do it in Santa Monica, which would be another great, test case, and I do want to watch
that
happen.
That would be amazing in
Santa
Monica.
It'll be great for this podcast alone, just for the weekly installments. okay, so now that you've both taken all mine, I'm going to go back to the trees. I'm always
great
talking about the trees.
Yeah.
And I wrote this story in June about what a mess the city's tree situation is in. After we have now seen... that was at the beginning of the summer. We've seen some of the hottest temperatures recorded. I think the July was the hottest state temperatures recorded in the state's history. We saw some pretty high temperatures and then, of course, some very horrible fires. We saw the smog problem coming back. We've seen still issues with our water. Trees can solve all of these things. The city has not had any kind of response to this until the very end of the year. There was this new kind of plan that we're going to start to put together. They got some funding. They got some roles at the Urban Forestry Department at the city filled. So they've hired a bunch of people. They've hired a consulting firm to figure out what the problem is. I'll tell you what the problem is. You don't have enough trees. Mm-hmm. And then they have released this like first steps document that kind of talks about, here are the things that we think that you should start to do to fix this problem. They don't know how many trees are dead. They don't know how many trees are still in the tree wells. They haven't done any kind of census since the 90s. And now they're cutting more trees down to do sidewalk repair and widen streets and do these all these other things. So I say in the next year, I go around the city and I see things like this cool pavement pilot program. You guys seen these things where they're mm-hmm. like painting the streets white in all these places. I haven't seen the same kind of concerted effort just around trees. And
right.
you can get free trees from the city. Nobody knows that.
Yeah.
You can put them in certain places that need them more, like around freeways or near parks or near schools, to create that canopy and that buffer and that the health benefits that we need. This could be a very simple program that the mayor could do over the next year. And every mayor had this like million trees campaign.
Well, so I was going to say that was a big Villa Ragosa thing that everyone made fun of him for. And he is a true doofus and should be made fun of for a lot of reasons. But that is not one of them. That was a totally... That was a great idea. It was an ambitious effort, and he honestly should have run on the fact that they planted 400,000 trees.
Yeah.
He crushed the DWP's program at the same time they were trying to plant like 200,000 and planted like 40,000 in 5 years. So he got a lot of trees. Like, it's amazing how much worse the problem we currently have now with the number of trees we have would be if not for him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think there was like, there was that people did the million trees thing. So we need like a million trees in a year or something like that. I mean, and it really is going to make a big difference in our energy savings and in the deaths. I mean, looking at how people are exposed to heat, especially when you don't have a place to live that has air conditioning or that is safe or that is ventilated properly. And you can look at all these situations across the city where our elderly residents are really exposed to like very dire health consequences mm-hmm. by not having, you know, a safe place to walk when they go outside and by not having trees outside their apartment building that might shade their building enough to keep it cool on the inside. And I won't go into my anti-palm tree campaign today.
Say what tree? What tree are you pro? What tree do you want to see up all over the
any
place?
Any tree that creates a good canopy for ficus? The city. Well, ficus. Some people have their own issues with that
because they destroy the sidewalk
for various reasons. But they don't have to if you take good care of them, and that's the maintenance part that's been missing for the last few years in our city for the last few decades. So. Plant a million trees. I'm not even joking. And look at what the impacts of looking forward for the streets that all have palm trees. Those don't count as trees. So you have to plant trees between the palm trees on the streets.
It does feel like it's not like advertising, like the program where they give out free trees is one thing and like incentivizing people planting trees on their property. But the biggest change I feel like is probably changing where trees can be put up along like major thoroughfares. Mm-hmm. Just basically
right, so get rid of parking.
Yes.
Take all the parking out.
Just like take Vermont and yeah. take the parking out off of Vermont and
or
have that be just
side.
Like a tree lined canopy
yes.
all the way up and down. Turn that
Greenways
into
ways going through the city.
Yes. Yeah.
And that will make it will if we did that, if we really did that and that we made an effort, the city would dramatically change. So fast. And think for the Olympics if you want to think ahead.
Oh, God.
And try to pretend like you want to do something good for 10 years from now.
Sold.
You have to plant those today.
That's your achievement. You're going to check in next year and see if the city planted a million
they
trees.
They do track how many trees they're planting. They have all these new urban forestry Great. Positions filled. So hopefully they're listening.
Great. Guys, I had a great year. I've loved doing this show. Thank you guys so much for giving your time and energy for only a salary of low seven figures to do this to do this podcast. I really appreciate it. No, it's free. I just hope no one thinks everyone knows that's a joke because we do it for free. and thank you everyone so much for listening. I've been really happy with how the show has grown. For a local news show. I love watching the people. Numbers go up. I love refreshing the stats. there is, what were you going to say?
Oh, people are as desperate as we thought they were.
So I hope we get to do a lot more of this and a lot more other stuff in this vein in the new year. Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Bye.